good morning. In January of 2006, we began a really exciting journey in doing an educational intervention in the world of cervical cancer prevention, and in particular HPV. Now, this was really exciting because, as you can think back even now, all the publicity and press that we're reading about HPV, if you can think back to a year ago, how exciting this was. So you heard all the stuff in the paper, the conservative parents, a lot of the right-wing groups were really up in arms about the vaccines, and physicians didn't know a lot about it. So we received an educational grant from GlaxoSmithKline to really... hold my breath here. There we go. To focus on doing this year-long educational initiative. Now, what was also unique about this, if you can think about this from an educator's perspective, and I've been in this business for about 15 years, when we think about education from cardiovascular, depression, any new disease state, there's usually a backgrounder in which the learner is coming from. With HPV, there really wasn't much of a backgrounder, and especially it's direct linked to cervical cancer. So when we started off and looking at our curriculum and planning forward, we had to first of all develop our own curriculum and say, so what is it that we need to teach? What are some of the barriers that we predict will ultimately be out there? And the first one was age. And when we think about it, it's the first time a pediatrician or primary care physician is going to ultimately have to get into a conversation with a 9, 10, 11-year-old girl or their parents around a skin-to-skin infection that's ultimately caused via, you know, sexual activity in some sort. So these were very uncomfortable conversations. Now, behind that was the lack of the policy. It's a lot easier to go in and have that discussion if you can say, well, so-and-so says so. But now you actually have to have the persuasive skill set to engage in that discussion, get pushback, be convincing around and knowledgeable around HPV and the need to vaccinate and move that discussion forward. I'd mentioned some of the physician barriers, but I'm sorry, the parent barriers and their perceptions, but it's interesting too, the duality of some of the physician misperceptions too, and I'll share a quick story from a curriculum development meeting that we were having at M2 with all of these big thought leaders around HPV and cervical cancer prevention. And, you know, these are the people that, you know, fight in the fight, and we were actually at lunch, and we were just sharing, you know, what was going on. And one of the physicians had mentioned that his daughter was going to be going away for an annual trip, and it was kind of one of these rites of passage summer vacations, and came up, are you going to get her HPV vaccinated? And some of you, absolutely not. Why would I need to do that? My daughter. And suddenly the whole table is turning and looking at this guy, and we're like, you're the very person that's supposed to be on the side here. So I think you oftentimes have to look inside yourself for some of your reasons here. So we really wanted to increase knowledge around cervical cancer prevention as it relates to HPV, the direct link to HPV and cervical cancer prevention, and then the vaccines as well. Just when you thought. So I'm going to turn it over to my colleague Julie, who's going to share with you the backgrounder.
So we wanted to look at how to evaluate whether this educational initiative was working and sort of what were the physician attitudes surrounding HPV vaccination. So in order to do this, we looked at developing a case-based survey, which has received a lot of credibility in the literature for predicting physician practices, and developed a two different surveys based on the learning objectives of the educational program and based on the evidence that was in the literature. So what we really wanted to do was get the participants in the activity who got the education and compare them to a demographically similar control group, the people that didn't get the education, and they received the same survey. So what we ended up getting were about 150 primary care physicians with about 15 years in practice and 130 obstetricians and gynecologists with about 21 years in practice. The other demographics, so the majority of them were medical doctors and DOs. However, we did have some nurse practitioners and physician's assistants within the sample, both groups that treat this population and can administer the HPV vaccine.
Yeah.
Oops.
Go back one.
There we go. education events that focus on the natural history of HPV, its role in cervical cancer, and the efficacy and safety of the vaccine to prevent viral infection, and also any barriers that the physician identified to the vaccination process. And in order to do this educational initiative, we used a blended learning approach, which combined both live symposia, CD-ROMs, a series of newsletters, the web, print materials, and a 3D animation to implement the education. And the intended learners of this group were pediatricians, obstetricians, gynecologists, and primary care physicians. And of note, we combined the primary care physicians with the pediatricians, and the primary care physicians consist of family medicine, family practice, general practice, and whatnot. So that's something to keep in mind when looking at the results. So here we looked at two different levels of barriers, barriers to management of HPV, but also barriers to the adoption of the HPV vaccine. And on the left column are the participants, and on the right column are the non-participants. So for the barriers to HPV management, you can see that an overwhelming number of people said that lack of patient knowledge about HPV was a huge barrier to the management of HPV. For adoption of the vaccine, you can see that 43% of both participants and non-participants said that the unwillingness of parents to vaccinate their child was a huge barrier to the adoption of the vaccine. And this is really, you know, confirmed and tied to the beginning where we thought when developing this educational program, you know, what sort of barriers do we expect to see? We're not really sure, and thinking of the parents, you know, playing a role in this and the ages of vaccination. And this is really confirmed by the physicians in identifying these barriers. Now I'll turn it over to Dr. Trivedi.
Good morning. So what was our impact of education after 41 CME events, 41 CME programs? Was there a difference between what, was there a difference between the participants, what they learned, and a difference between a group that didn't get the education? And there was definitely a positive effect on three main areas, specifically the knowledge base, screening practice, and the treatment approach. Participating physicians, those who received the education, were able to recognize models that describe the possible mode of transmission of HPV. Participating physicians were able to select optimal screening programs, and participating physicians, and I think this is probably the most important, were comfortable enough to recommend the HPV vaccination. And again, just to reiterate what Julie said, the primary care physicians included pediatricians, NPs, and general practitioners. So public health implications, what does all of this mean? How can we go back and integrate this into clinical practice, into our classrooms, and how can we take this information and make it useful? We divided our barriers into competence and performance. Competence meaning what don't we know? What doesn't the clinical community know? And performance means what they are doing. What could they be doing better? And for competence, we need to get better with HPV in general, that there is a lack of HPV knowledge. We don't know that it is a skin-to-skin disease and transmission of the virus is uncomplicated, meaning that this virus is not transmitted through bodily fluids. You don't need to have sexual intercourse to get this disease, this infection, excuse me. There is a lack of knowledge and unawareness that there are different types of oncogenic HPV. Now, we may or may not know, as all of you may or may not know, 16 and 18 are the two main types of strains, the two main types of HPV that cause cervical cancer. But we need to look beyond 16 and 18 and realize that there are types 31, there's types 45, and there's types 52. And if you get an infection with type 18, you can, and you clear that infection, you can get another infection with a different strain. So that's definitely something that we need to keep in mind. And there's an unfamiliarity of epidemiology and risk factors for acquiring HPV. Now, the biggest age group that is at risk for acquiring HPV infection is those women between the ages of 15 and 24. And their risk factors include early sexual debut, multiple partners, their habits of their male partners. So when we see these patients in clinical practice, we really need to effectively communicate all of their risks. Even something like smoking is a risk factor for HPV. Now, our performance phase. Now, we need to recognize that symptoms of cervical disease appear slowly. You may have an abnormal Pap, and it takes months to years for cancerous changes to occur. Specifically, something like adenocarcinoma, which is caused by HPV type 18. You can get infected with HPV type 18, and adenocarcinoma is particularly deadly. You see it more in elderly patients, and the disease, the signs and symptoms are very, very slow to appear. So we really need to educate our PCPs, our OBGYNs, on this particular point. And again, we need to effectively communicate strategies for protection from cervical cancer. And a point that I want to make, especially from a public healthcare perspective, is that we're going to be seeing patients with that come from different ethnic backgrounds. Middle Eastern women, Asian women, sometimes the sex and the topic of sex is kind of taboo, so we need to, they don't even come in for regular pap smears sometimes. They only see doctors who are their particular ethnic background, so we need to make sure that we communicate with our patients across all socioeconomic statuses and across all therapeutic areas. Across all ethnic backgrounds. Okay. And again, we need to implement screening guidelines and vaccine administrations in practice. Okay, for OBGYN's competence. Unfamiliarity around vaccination administration. This is really important from an OBGYN perspective because OBGYNs, they don't vaccinate. And if they do, it's a flu shot, which is just one shot, and their nurse in practice will give it to them. The HPV vaccination, it's a multiple of shots, and it requires patient follow-up. Unawareness of the utility of HPV vaccines for women across all ages. And the ACIP recommendations are for those women, for those girls between the ages of 9 and 26. How do we deal with patients who come in who are 30 years old, who are 50 years old, who want the vaccine? And again, we need to emphasize the recommended cervical cancer screening guidelines better. When you're 18, when do you come in? What about a girl who's 16 years old? How do we deal with that? And again, we need to be able to implement this vaccine administration into clinical practice.